taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
You've probably heard about the ruling from a district court judge in Florida that struck down the CDC's mask mandate on public transportation. There's been plenty of discussion about what this means, how people have reacted, and the fact that the Biden administration is appealing this decision. What has been lost in most of the conversation is the fact that the judge did not find the rule unconstitutional. But what does this fact mean for the American people?
Well, we'll discuss that next, right here on the Constitution Study. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Engel. We are here to read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. And we're going to start off today looking at this opinion released by this Florida judge and what she found and what she didn't find.
Reading from the judge's opinion, we get some of the background for this case. As travelers have been reminded for more than a year, federal law requires a mask in airports, train stations, and other transportation hubs, as well as on airplanes, buses, trains, and most other public conveyances in the United States. Failure to comply may result in civil and criminal penalties, including removal from the conveyance. This masking requirement, commonly known as the mask mandate, is a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention regulation published in the Federal Register on February 3, 2021. I've made my position on mandates pretty clear in these episodes many times. I have flown with a mask not because the government required it, but because a private company did so. Yes, they required the mask because of an illegal government order, but that was between them and the federal government. Since the airlines refused to stand up against these illegal orders, I have since stopped flying commercial airlines. What I want to focus on here is the case that was brought against Joe Biden and his CDC by Health Freedom Defense and others. In July 2021, Sarah Pope, Anna Danza, and Health Freedom Defense Fund sued various government officials and the CDC, seeking a declaratory judgment that the mask mandate was unlawful and to have it set aside for violating the Administrative Procedures Act. This is another example of why it is so important to go beyond the headlines. Now, all the reporting I've seen about a federal judge's ruling — judges don't rule, by the way, they opine — who struck down, that's not true either, the CDC's mask mandate, missed one very important point. The judge never found that the mandate was unconstitutional, because the suit against President Biden and the CDC never asked her to. Now, the CDC claimed that Congress gave them the authority to issue the mandate under the Public Health Services Act of 1944, Title 42 of the United States Code, Section 264A. Now, reading from the opinion. Thus, if Section 264A authorizes the mask mandate, the power to do so must be found in one of the actions enumerated in the second sentence. That sentence provides for inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction, and other measures. Section 264A. A requirement that individual travelers wear a mask is not inspection, fumigation, disinfection, destruction, or pest extermination, and the government does not contend otherwise. The Public Health Services Act, the PHSA, lists what the CDC can do to prevent the spread of communicable diseases. Mask mandates are not on that list. Now, the CDC claims that this mandate falls under sanitation and is therefore authorized by Congress. Instead, it argues that the mask mandate is a sanitation measure or an other measure akin to sanitation. The PHSA does not define sanitation. If a term goes undefined in a statute, courts give the term its ordinary meaning. Now, courts often start with dictionaries. Given that the statute was enacted in 1944, the court looked to dictionaries from the early to mid-20th century to begin its analysis. They provide two senses of sanitation that are relevant here. First, sanitation may refer to measures that clean something or that removes filth, such as trash collection, washing with soap, incineration, or plumbing. Second, sanitation may refer to measures that keep something clean. Redefining words to get them to mean something that supports your position is a standard practice in the legal profession. However, using a simple dictionary search, the court found that the CDC's definition didn't cover what they wanted it to. Put simply, sanitation as used in the PHSA could have referred to active measures to cleanse something or to preserve the cleanliness of something. While the latter definition would appear to cover the mask mandate, the former definition would preclude it. Accordingly, the court must determine which of these two senses is the best reading of the statute. Since the judge dealt with the question of the mandate violating the Administrative Procedures Act, or the APA, we should look at that as well. Notice and comment does not apply when the agency for good cause finds and incorporates the finding in a brief statement of reasons, therefore in the rules issued, that notice and public procedure thereon are impracticable, unnecessary, or contrary to the public interest. The mandate invokes this exception to forego notice and comment, so the court must determine whether a 30-day notice and comment period was impracticable, unnecessary, or contrary to the public interest. This exception is to be narrowly construed and only reluctantly countenanced. It applies only in emergency situations or where delay could result in serious harm. Congress, when it illegally delegates its lawmaking authority to the executive branch, puts rules in place as to how an agency could go about making those rules. One of those requirements is that there be a 30-day period so that the people would be aware of the new rule and have the opportunity to comment on it. Now, it should be a surprise to no one that the federal government gave itself away to get around these pesky rules. If the rules are impracticable, unnecessary, or contrary to the public interest, Congress said it's okay to ignore the notice and comment period. Of course, who determines what is and is not necessary or impracticable? Who decides what is in the public interest? According to the CDC, in this case, they do. But what did the court find? Specifically, the APA requires that an agency invoking good cause incorporate its finding and a brief statement of reasons why it believes notice and comment is impracticable or contrary to the public interest. Courts do not defer to the agency's conclusion on good cause. The court's review of the CDC's determination that good cause exists is limited to the grounds that the agency invoked when it took the action. The court may not supply a reasoned basis for the agency's action that the agency itself has not given. The mandate asserted that there was good cause to dispense with prior public notice and comment because, given the public health emergency caused by COVID-19, it would be impracticable and contrary to the public's health, and by extension, the public's interest to delay the issuance and effective date of this order. This statement, without more, is insufficient to establish good cause to dispense with notice and comment. In other words, the CDC said that there was good cause because, in their opinion, there was. Thankfully, the court disagreed. The APA also prohibits rules and regulations that are arbitrary and capricious, from the opinion. Plaintiffs raised three arguments on why the mask mandate was arbitrary and capricious. First, plaintiffs argue that the mandate failed to comply with 42 CFR section 70.2. Second, that the mandate was substantially unreasonable, and third, that the mandate failed to adequately explain the CDC's reasoning. Because the court agrees with plaintiffs that the CDC failed to adequately explain its reasoning, the court need not address whether the substantive decisions embodied in the mandate were themselves arbitrary and capricious, or whether the mandate violated 42 CFR section 70.2. In short, the court says that since they've already found that the CDC did not adequately explain its reasoning on bypassing the notice and comment period, they didn't need to deal with the question of arbitrary and capricious. It was already done. Now, reading the judge's conclusion, it is indisputable that the public has a strong interest in combating the spread of COVID-19. In pursuance of that end, the CDC issued the mask mandate, but the mandate exceeded the CDC's statutory authority, improperly invoked the good cause exception to notice and comment rulemaking, and failed to adequately explain its decision. Because our system does not permit an agency to act unlawfully even in pursuit of desirable ends, the court declares unlawful and vacates the mask mandate. Now, once again, we see the conflation of the federal government with the public. Now, whether or not we have a strong interest in combating the spread of COVID-19, that does not mean those in government have that interest as well. Based on the actual data from the CDC about the dangers of COVID-19, I could even dispute how strong that interest might be. In either case, the court found that the CDC had gone beyond the powers delegated to it by Congress and violated laws regarding the rulemaking. Now, for that reason, the court declared, actually the judge opined, that the mandate was unlawful and therefore vacated. The one question that was neither asked nor answered was, is the CDC's mask mandate constitutional? Because as the supreme law of the land, if the mandates are unconstitutional, there's much more at stake than being forced to wear a mask on public transportation. For any act of Congress to be valid, it must be made pursuant to the Constitution. At least that's what Alexander Hamilton said in Federalist Papers No. 78. There is no position which depends on clearer principle than that every act of a delegated authority, contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised, is void. No legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. So if an act of Congress, contrary to the Constitution, cannot be valid, we must start there. Now, the 10th Amendment states, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Therefore, the first question that should be asked about any federal law is, does it exercise a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution? That includes, by the way, the Public Health Services Act, Title 42 of the United States Code, Section 264A. The opening sentence of Section 264A grants the CDC power to issue regulations that, in its judgment, are necessary to prevent the spread of communicable diseases. Is the prevention of a spread of a communicable disease a power delegated to the United States? No. Is the regulation of public health delegated to the United States? No. Is regulation of public transportation a power delegated to the United States? Again, no. Now, some may claim these powers exist under the General Welfare Clause, but that is not what Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the Constitution says. It says, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Not only is the general welfare in this clause limited to the United States, the proper noun for the Union of States and exactly the same subject as in the 10th Amendment, but this clause is limited to collecting taxes, not regulating them. As James Madison said in Congress in 1792, if Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress, for every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. Now, others may claim that Congress and the CDC act under the Necessary and Proper Clause. Once again, that is not what the Constitution says, this time in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. Congress has the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested in this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Congress only has the power to enact laws necessary and proper for executing the power the Constitution has vested in the government of the United States, not whatever they think is necessary. So if the United States has not been delegated the power to regulate the public health or prevent the spread of communicable diseases, the PHSA is not a valid law and therefore void. Not only according to Mr. Hamilton, but the Supreme Court as well in the Marbury versus Madison opinion. Thus, a particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principle, supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts, as well as other departments, are bound by that instrument. Now, as I asked at the beginning of this episode, what does this mean for the American people? If the judge is correct, and the only problem with the mask mandate is that it wasn't implemented properly, well, then there's nothing stopping either the CDC or another agency from reinstituting it, as long as they follow the Administrative Procedures Act. If, on the other hand, I am correct, And the PHSA itself is unconstitutional and therefore invalid and void. Then we the people never needed to follow it in the first place. The CDC, the states and cities that run the airports, the airlines, and everyone else were following a law that did not legally exist. That makes it just like all those who were afraid to say anything when the emperor walked around with no clothes. It's worse than that, though, because they also committed a federal crime under Title 18, Section 242 of the United States Code. Whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. Now, for those who used violence in an attempt to get people to comply with this invalid order, well, things could get worse. And if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosives, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. Now, you may be asking, what rights, privileges, or immunities protected by the Constitution are violated by a mask mandate? Well, from the Fifth Amendment, we read, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." If you are forced to wear a mask because of a law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, you are being deprived of the liberty to live your life as you see fit and the property you have in the control of your body. Now, since no one bothered to safeguard your rights during this process, you did not receive due process. An established course for judicial proceedings or other governmental safeguards designed to safeguard the legal rights of the individual. These mandates are not based on a person's actual infectiousness or danger to others. It simply assumes everyone is guilty of being a danger to others and therefore must have their rights restricted. Once again, we see that Founding Father John Jay was correct. Every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they will sooner perceive when they are violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. Perhaps, if we take this opportunity to learn our rights now, we can avoid such an infringement on them in the future.
Now, I've run a little long in this segment, so I got to dash out to a break. But before I do, I want to remind you to head to HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell is a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cellular health. They've reinvented the vitamin. Now, they've got a lot of different products. One of the ones I love is their Immune Super Boost. I just got back from a conference. I was definitely on Immune Super Boost to help protect my immune system while I'm encountering and getting a chance to greet and meet all of these wonderful people. So give it a try. Use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and they will give you 20% off your first order. So again, head to HealthyCell.com. Try any of their products. Just make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud, and they will give you a 20% discount as a thank you.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to HealthyCell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, HealthyCell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. Most of that came from an article I've written. You can find that article on constitutionstudy.com and learn more about the court's response, and as well as get some quotes and references you can use and you can share with others. But of course, the story didn't stop with the mandate being vacated by a judge. The CDC asked the DOJ, and the Biden administration has agreed to appeal the court's decision ending the travel, the mask mandate for travel. I warned you, this is going to go on because we missed a very important point. You know, this judge, like most attorneys and most people who went to law school, probably didn't study the Constitution in law school, probably studied constitutional law. They were so focused on the law and instead focused on the opinions of the courts, although she did look at the statutory law. She completely ignored the supreme law of the land, apparently, the Constitution of the United States, most likely because the lawyer who filed the suit paid no attention to the Constitution of the United States either. This is what happens when we get disconnected from the Constitution and what it actually says. So now, A, we still have this court order being appealed. So all it will take is another judge to simply reverse that. But we've also told the government, hey, all you have to do to make this legal is make sure that the agency that issues the mandate actually has the authority, you know, as actually following the rules of Congress and actually follows the Administrative Procedures Act. That really was the big hang-up, was the Administrative Procedures Act, not the Constitution of the United States. And what's going to happen if they really just need to find another judge that is a little more amenable to the idea of the federal government ruling like dictators rather than following the law, including, by the way, the supreme law of the land. Now, by the way, this did not get rid of mask mandates on all public transit systems. Yes, the CDC, the order, the mandate was vacated from the CDC, meaning nationally they couldn't order, you couldn't be required to wear a mask to travel on public transit. But both New York and California left the mask mandates in place on their transit systems. Now, on the one hand, if we look at this and say, well, it was a legal issue, the CDC didn't follow the Administrative Procedures Act, or they didn't follow, or they exercised a power beyond their charter given to them by Congress, well, then we look at this and say, well, okay, then New York and California's transit systems are well within the law in implementing a mask mandate. If, on the other hand, we look at the constitutional issues, we recognize that these mandates violate the Fifth Amendment's Due Process Clause. In this case, they violate the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause because these are states doing this. Right? You shall not be deprived of life. The states cannot pass a law that deprive you of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The liberty to go about your life without government interference. The property you have in controlling your own body. And for those of you not familiar, due process is a judicial or governmental system designed to protect the rights of the individual. Mandates like this do not protect the rights of the individual. They destroy the rights of the individual in favor of the collective. They say, even though we've got no proof that you're a danger, you must do this not to protect yourself, but to protect someone else. This is the problem I have. Now, a lot of people go back to a previous court case, and I'm drawing a blank on the name. It had to do with, it was in the 1800s, somebody coming into, I believe, Boston on a ship that had smallpox on it. And the question was, could that person be required to get a smallpox vaccine or pay a fine? I think it was a $5 fine. And the point that was missed in all of this was there was probable cause that he had been infected with smallpox. He had been on a ship that had smallpox on it. There was probable cause. The real question was, you know, did they try to protect his rights? So they looked at it and said, wait a second, you individually, there's a possibility, there's evidence that you may be a danger to others. That's why we want you to have the vaccine. But we will give you an out, the $5 fine, which to me kind of says we don't really believe you're that much of a danger because, granted, in the 1800s, $5 was a lot more than it is today. If they really thought they were a danger to the public, why would they give them an opt-out like that? But the point was there was probable cause. They went through due process when the court said, yes, you could require a vaccine or a fine. There was due process involved. These mask mandates do not adhere to due process. You are assumed guilty until proven innocent, right? And you're not given an opportunity to even prove yourself innocent. This is a violation of due process. Now, if the court, if this Florida judge said, no, this violates the Fifth Amendment because it denies you due process, it denies you your liberty and control of your property, then people would have another arrow in their quiver, another way of a tool to say, wait a second, New York, California, you are violating the Constitution. If the federal government violates the Fifth Amendment when they deny it by denying us liberty and property without due process, then why is a state not violating the 14th Amendment when they do exactly the same thing? That's the importance of looking, of understanding the details, understanding what is underneath all of this nonsense. Now, since then, the CDC has issued a statement. They recommend people still wear masks on public transportation. Now, listen, if you want to wear a mask on public transportation, if it makes you feel better, if you think it keeps you safe, go ahead. So I don't care how many people think you're foolish. You have a right to say, I want to control my body, and I think this mask will give me some level of protection, so I'm going to wear it in these situations. That's the point. That's the difference between we recommend it, whether it makes scientific sense or not, and a mandate that says we require it. Recommending versus requiring. In a free country, the government can recommend you take actions that as long as they don't infringe on the rights of others. But they cannot require you to take those actions. I mean, they can recommend you wear a mask. They can't require that you wear a mask. They can recommend you take a quote-unquote vaccine, but they can't require that you take the quote-unquote vaccine. That's the difference between a free country, a constitutional republic, and a tyrannical dictatorship. In a tyrannical dictatorship, government tells you what to do. In a free country, they recommend what you do. Kind of tells you the state of America, right? How do we call ourselves a free country when the federal government dictates to people every day, every tiny little minutia of their life, from whether or not they wear a mask to what type of light bulbs they can use to what kind of toilets they can use to, you know, what kind of food they're allowed to eat? But I have another question for you. Does life imitate art, or does art imitate life? Now, let me explain. The Met Gala was attended by Hillary Clinton, former First Lady, former Secretary of State, failed presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton. Okay, what's the big deal? The photos of Hillary Clinton standing there, maskless, smiling in a beautiful gown, while a masked, we'll call him an assistant, adjusts her gown for her so the pictures all look nice. This does everything but say, let them eat cake. You have an elitist in an elite position walking around freely, no mask, no requirement, while her servant, or person acting as a servant, taking care of her dress, making sure she looks pretty, is required to put a mask on. I claim that wearing a mask is now becoming the equivalent of wearing the Yellow Star of David in Nazi Germany. It is an identification of your servanthood. If Hillary Clinton thought that masks protected her from COVID, she would be wearing one. She does not. But yet we have millions of Americans that are being told, you must wear a mask, even though the people calling for these ridiculous orders and mandates do not believe it. I know they don't believe it because they do not act that way. They say that the masks save lives, but they don't live like masks save lives. Like Anthony Fauci. I'm sorry. Why anybody pays any attention to what this man says is beyond me. He made a big deal that he was not going to the White House correspondence dinner because his individual assessment of personal risk meant it would be dangerous for him to be in a group that large. Sounds wonderful. Until you see all the pictures of him attending the pre-parties, taking pics with notable personalities, not wearing a, he's not wearing a mask. The person he's taking a picture with is not wearing a mask. This man does not believe that masks save him, that masks protect him, because he doesn't act that way. If he believed that the correspondence dinner was too high a risk, why is he going to the parties? If he believed that the masks were necessary to keep him safe, why is he not wearing one? This is a perfect example of do as I say, not as I do. Well, guess what? Mr. Fauci, you're not a king. And Ms. Clinton, you're not a queen. We didn't elect you to be our dictators. We didn't elect anybody to be our dictators. It's about time we start standing up and saying, no, we refuse. We will not comply with these void, illegal mandates. And we will point out the hypocrisy and the foolishness and the idiocracy of these people who claim to be, Anthony Fauci claimed to be the science. And said, you should listen to me, you should do exactly what I say, because I am the science, and if you disagree with me, you disagree with science. Mr. Fauci, you disagree with yourself. The hypocrisy is so thick, I'm surprised it's not dripping off him like sweat. But yet people still follow him. People still, and if you want to take his advice, be my guest. I can't stop you. But the very idea that this man still has a job in our government is a slap in the face to every American that believes in freedom, in liberty, and in a constitutional republic. This man has lied under oath. This man has colluded and committed fraud. This man has promoted the human experimentation on a untested drug, not simply allowed it, but demanded it, mandated it, pushed it, required it. Yet here he is. He's out having a party. He still makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year of government taxpayer money. He's making God knows how much more from his ownership in these companies, his patents on these products. And the American people simply, you know, so many Americans brush aside his hypocrisy, his lies, his failures. Do you want to know why America's a mess? America's a mess because the American people keep hiring idiots to represent them and don't fire them when they show themselves to be idiots. Now, you may be asking yourself, well, what do we do, Paul? Come on. I mean, it's scary. Who do we listen to? Well, listen. Let me give you an example. See, one of our founding fathers, John Jay, And I'm wondering how many of you have actually heard of him. He was actually the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He said every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. He didn't say the lawyers, the judges, the politicians. Lord knows, I wish they would. Every member of the state, everyone, should read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't even read and study the Constitution in law school. I've asked lawyers for years, did they study the Constitution or constitutional law? All but one have told me they studied the opinions of judges, constitutional law, rather than the actual supreme law of the land. It was written so an 18th century farmer can understand it. Why can't you? John Jay went on to say, by knowing their rights, they'll sooner perceive when they're violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. You want to get prepared to defend and assert your rights. You start by studying the Constitution. Now, you can find out more about this at my website, constitutionstudy.com. You can read my articles. You can buy my books. I've got a 30-day devotional. You want to read the Constitution, but you think it's too hard, it'll take you too long? It's a 30-day devotional, and in 30 days, you'll read the Declaration and the Constitution, every clause. Takes you about, two and a half minutes a day. And that'll put you miles ahead of most of these people we see that claim the authority to tell you how to live your life. I've also written a book called The Constitution Study that is an in-depth, clause-by-clause study of the entire Declaration of Independence and the Constitution written in plain English. But of course, you can also join me here every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time for The Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Listen on the media players or on our awesome apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Most of all, you can find the links at AmericaOutloud.com so you can share them with friends and family and social media and help them learn to read and study the Constitution and to defend and assert their rights.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and coronaviruses are everywhere. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to reduce these threats with an invisible mask as an additional layer of protection? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours deactivating viruses and germs while protecting you from airborne pathogens that make us sick. America Out Loud listeners get 20% off. Use Cofix RX while in large groups, while traveling, or for any other type of high-risk situation as an additional layer of protection to help reduce your likelihood of catching a cold, the flu, or SARS-CoV-2 viruses. Right now, America Out Loud listeners get 20% off of all orders. Click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about mandates. We talked about the court case that overturned vacated the CDC's mask mandate. And we looked at some of the other things around it, the fact that it's being appealed, the fact that it only affects public transportation at a federal level, that cities and states are still implementing mask mandates. We went through a lot of that stuff. Now, I want to roll back a little bit because one of the things that people say, well, okay, maybe it's not constitutional, but it's important. It's necessary. We have to, we're all going to die if we don't follow these mask mandates. Well, they don't use those words, but they kind of use that idea. It's like the world's coming to an end. Well, the CDC issued a report. Now, I've already pointed out that the actual death numbers are overall 1.6% or less from COVID. If you exclude the old and the infirm, it's like 0.5%. Children, statistically zero. I mean, there's only been, I think, 200 or 300 over the last, 2 years of COVID. there's a lot going on here. Well, the CDC's issued a new report. Now, they've already told us that something like 90-some-odd percent of the deaths reported were may have been misclassified. 75% are people who died with COVID, not necessarily of COVID. Well, now they come out and say, oh, yeah, 67% of the children hospitalized with COVID, at least during the Omicron surge, had at least one comorbidity, meaning they were hospitalized with COVID, not necessarily because of COVID. And in fact, they're finding out that, yeah, what happened is the children were coming in for other reasons. They were getting tested. And, oh, guess what? They tested positive for COVID, even though they didn't have symptoms. And also, according to the report, you know, the two-thirds of the children under age 11 had things like diabetes or obesity or other underlying conditions that would, if not lead them to go to the hospital, certainly would contribute to the symptoms if they got COVID. Again, using a little bit of logic, a little bit of reason, a little bit of calm, and looking what's actually going on will help lead us away from this crazy fascist government controls every aspect of your life. Yes, I use the word fascist. I could also use Marxist. I could use tyrant, totalitarian, use any adjective you want. This all comes down to government controlling the American people. As is attributed to Thomas Jefferson, they want the people to fear government. Now, as if that wasn't bad enough, records are showing that the CDC purchased tracking data on 20 million U.S. phones in order to see if you're complying with their lockdown. You see, according to a FOIA request submitted by Vice, the CDC admits they derive data from at least 20 million active cell phone users per day across the United States with the purpose of determining if they were complying with lockdowns and curfews. According to Vice, the document specifically shows that the CDC used this data to monitor curfew compliance. A 2021 document states that the data has been critical for ongoing response efforts, such as hourly monitoring of activity in curfew zones and detailed counts of visits to participating pharmacies for vaccine monitoring. That's right. The Centers for Disease Control, the groups that's supposed to be, from my understanding, giving you statistical data about a disease, was buying with your money cell phone tracking data to see if you were complying with these illegal lockdowns and curfews. Lockdowns are illegal. The government does not have the right without due process to prevent you from leaving your home. And now the CDC has taken cell phone data and used it to track you. And this should be nothing new. We've known for years, you know, for over a decade, that the government is listening in on phone calls and tracking data. We all wear tracking devices pretty much everywhere we go. But what does it say about the state of our country when the CDC is tracking to see if you're complying with a lockdown order, rather than looking at saying, wait a second, the Constitution doesn't allow these lockdown orders. Why are we not punishing those that are issuing these illegal mandates? Now, if we should learn anything from the last 2 years of COVID is, one, what the American people will let the government get away with. That's the only way I can put it. We stood by, the vast majority of the American people stood by and let the federal government trample our rights, treat us as subjects, as serfs, as less than human beings in some states. And we just stood back and took it. Oh, yeah, there were a few that stood up, and there were a few that threw temper tantrums and said, went, you know, crying to the federal government, going, please, federal government, protect us from the federal government. But there were very few that actually stood up and said, oh, no, we ain't doing this. I think about Attila's Gym in New Jersey, where the owners refused to shut down. They refused to be locked out of their own business. I think of reports of others. For some reason, a lot of in the hair care industry, you know, barbers and salon owners, who refused to sit back and say, no, we are essential. People depend on us. We're not going to shut everything down simply because you said so. We don't see the need. You don't have the legal authority to do it. Which is why I go all the way back to the beginning. The fact that a court did not say that the mandates were unconstitutional. No, 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 no. They merely said that they didn't follow the laws that Congress had put in place, even though the laws that Congress put in place were themselves unconstitutional. Our general ignorance of our rights and our Constitution and how we can protect them truly is disturbing. You know, I remember a story I wrote probably about a year ago. There was a county in eastern Tennessee, McMinn County. This is at the end of World War II. Soldiers were coming back from the war in Europe. And you had a county sheriff and another county official that were literally stealing elections. They were violating the rights of the people. You had men that had gone overseas to fight for the right to vote and the right to live free. And it was being stolen right out from under their noses. Well, they stood up and did something about it. In fact, they went so far as to go to the National Guard Armory, withdraw weapons, and there was a gunfight in the town of Athens, Tennessee, to make sure that the election wasn't stolen. Now, I don't want to get to that point. I don't want to get to the point where we have to use force of arms to protect our rights. But if the American people don't get off their duffs and start protecting their rights today, I don't see any other way of going to it. You can't sit back and let government act like a big bully for years and years and years and years and then suddenly expect that they're going to stop just because you say, "Mother, may I?" It's one of the reasons why here at the Constitution Study, we focus on helping everyday Americans read and study the Constitution. I was being interviewed for a radio piece the other day, and it was interesting because as we were discussing, that the topic was actually gun control, but it kept going into, well, the Constitution says this, and did you realize this? It was, in other words, it wasn't simply, you know, gun control bad. It was, well, wait a second, the Constitution, the Second Amendment says this, and Article 6, Clause 2 says that, and Article 6, Clause 3 says the other, and putting an argument together to show beyond a shadow of a doubt that gun control laws are void. They're empty. They're meaningless. Why don't we do the same for the rest of this? When will the American people realize the federal government is not supreme? The Constitution is supreme. That the states rule over the federal government, not the other way around. If they would just grow a spine and actually do it. The last 2+ years, this whole COVID insanity has shown the American people that those in Washington are tyrants and those in our state houses, in many cases, are part tyrant, part coward. They're either complicit or afraid. We need to choose better employees. We need to choose better representatives. You know, it's primary season, and I'm not big on primaries. I won't go into the details here, but just say primaries are there to limit the choice of the American people, to take away choices when it comes to vote. But as I was preparing for this primary, because in my county, pretty much it's all one-sided. The primary election pretty much decides who's going to hold office. So you know what I did? I met with the incumbents. I met with the candidates. I talked with them. I did as much as I, as if someone was willing to, if I could contact them and talk to them, I did. And I wanted to understand, what did you do to fulfill your oath to support the Constitution? And if all they could give me were talking points, I can't vote for them. I don't care if they're the right party. I don't care if they've held that job. I don't care all the goodies and bribery they've brought in. I don't care. If you cannot show me how you have supported, fulfilled your oath to support the Constitution, you're not qualified to hold office. But Paul, that's in the county level. Yeah, that is the county level. And the county level is important. The sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer of the county. If he doesn't protect my rights, who will? If I'm hiring county officials that are protecting my rights, you know what? If I can educate my neighbors to vet their county officials based on their fidelity to their oath of office, maybe I can also train them to do the same thing at the state level, so that our state reps and our state senator and our governor and whatever other offices your state may elect, that they are making sure their employees are faithful to their oath of office. See, then we can make a change in Washington, whether it's by electing better people or simply by getting the states to stand up to the federal government and say, no, we didn't authorize that. I know this is unique. This is not what you are taught in school. You were taught a lie. When I first studied the Constitution, the two things I recognized was how much I had not been taught about the Constitution and how much of what I taught was not true. That's what comes from looking at it yourself, not taking someone else's word for what it says. Read it yourself. Now, if you want to join us, there's great ways you can do it. Again, go to constitutionstudy.com. Try one of the books. I have several of them digitally available for free. You could also join us for our Constitution study. We're studying online the Constitution of the United States. We just finished Article 2. You can go back. I record every one of these. In fact, you go to constitutionstudy.com/study. You can find out all about the study. You can listen to the first three lessons where we covered the Bill of Rights. Absolutely free. That is worth more than a lot of the educations I see people getting about the Constitution. Just to sit there and listen as a group of people, read the Bill of Rights, talk about what it means and how we apply it. And then if you want to join us for the rest of the study, well, the information is right there on that website. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/study. It's why John Jay said we need to read and study. Everyone needs to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. Which brings me to one other thought. So I just got back from a homeschool conference in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And one of the things that I've realized is how little good education material there is targeted at our children. Middle school, high school especially. So I'm considering putting together a program specifically for school-age children, and their parents would be certainly welcome to join. Now, I'm still working on the ideas. If you think that's a good idea, if you would like me to pursue that, if you have ideas of what you'd like to see covered, by all means, go to constitutionstudy.com. Just go under About Us. You'll be able to contact me directly and send me a note and give me some ideas. I think this is a great possibility. I think it's something that we can truly benefit from in the long term. No, it won't be a short-term solution. But it took us 150 years to make this mess. We're not going to fix it overnight. So let's invest some time and effort and maybe even some dollars into educating the next generation to be free. I mean, just think of the legacy you could leave for your children or your grandchildren. Sure, you may have some land, a family farm, maybe a family campground. You may have put some money away. Maybe you have an old car that you've been keeping forever. But can you think of a better legacy than the legacy of an understanding of freedom and liberty? The legacy of an America that is more free than the one we have today. Where the idea of mandates and lockdowns ministries of truth and the government regulating every part of your life is so antithetical, so inconceivable, that the next generation not only wouldn't stand for it, they wouldn't even allow the concept to come to light. Truly a land of the free and a home of the brave. So if that's something you're interested in, again, check out constitutionstudy.com. Join us, help us build this legacy for the next generation. Because if we don't, Who will? And if you could do me one more favor, make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for news and happenings. Go there every day. Find the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, the information. Read them, listen to them, watch them, be involved, and then do the next step. Share them. Send them to friends, send them to family, send them to social media. Not simply to deal with AmericaOutloud.com, although that is a great thing to do. Not only to support them, but to educate, to show what's going on and initiate that discussion. Ask that difficult question. Take this as a seed of liberty that you are spreading like Johnny Appleseed. Take this idea of freedom, the idea of knowledge and information, and scatter it like seeds abroad. Now, maybe this will come back to you, maybe it won't. But if you help us, if we spread these ideas and concepts, you can join us as we help to secure the blessings of liberty, both for ourselves and for our posterity.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.